Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Road to Revolution podcast, my journey with Linkin Park. And on today's episode, we are going to be talking about two shows from the Project Revolution tour in 2007. And this tour was a monster, especially if you think about it now, in the scope of who these bands are in 2020 versus what this tour was in 2007. You had Linkin Park headlining the tour for Minutes to Midnight, which had just come out a few months prior and was doing great numbers and was a huge hit. I think they're on their second or third single from the album at this point. And then they had co-headlining the tour with My Chemical Romance, who were touring for Black Parade, which was an unbelievable hit. You can go anywhere without hearing the song on the radio, and they were selling out their own tours. It was just crazy. And then Taking Back Sunday were co-headlining as well, who were still riding the big success of Louder Now. So the three of them together on this tour for what I want to say was less than $100 a ticket, just completely unreal. Plus you add in the rest of the main stage was him and Placebo, I think, or Julian K. I always mix up some of the bands from Project Revolution 2007 and 2008. So I get some of that mixed up, but just this tour was unreal for what you paid. Even if you paid $200 for those three bands, you know, that's also unreal. But to see this back then was just amazing. Yeah, I've seen all three of these bands, obviously, Linkin Park several times. Especially if you listen to this show, you know this is the 19th and 20th time I've seen them now. But My Chem, I'd seen a bunch. Take Back Sunday, I'd seen a bunch at this point. So to see them all together was a real treat. And the first one we're going to talk about was, like I said, Project Revolution 2007. We're talking about the Jones Beach stop in Wanton, New York, on August 15th, 2007. Now, my friend Sal and I, you know, you've heard the name many times before in these stories. We went to the show together. And sometimes to better the seating experience, especially for shows that didn't have a general admission pit, Sal and I would sometimes try to venture out and get separate tickets if it meant being closer. You know, we would drive to the shows together and we would hang out in between bands and stuff. So even if we weren't directly next to each other or near each other during the show, that was fine as long as we were as close to the stage as possible. Because as much as we loved hanging out together, we loved being as close to the band as possible during these shows. That was the goal. So I had a decent ticket. I want to say it was like fifth or sixth row for this tour. And Sal wasn't far off either. And then a day or so before the show, I was like, let me look and see what's on eBay. And in hindsight, it was a great decision, but financially it was not a great decision because it was not cheap. A front row ticket, one single front row ticket popped up. And I don't remember the exact price. I want to say it was somewhere between $400 and $500. But I'd never had a legit front row seat for a Linkin Park show before. I'd had front row for the rail where we wait all day and, you know, get up on the railing when the doors open. But I don't think I've ever had a front row seat, like a seat with an assigned number and letter for me. So this was kind of a cool deal. And work was going pretty well at the time. I didn't have a lot of other expenses. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let me splurge on this. So I bought the front row seat and it was awesome. Like literally dead center front row, which makes this even cooler. Cause you know, as I mentioned, seeing these three bands together, plus him, I'd seen a couple of times before and they didn't tour the US a ton. I think the last time I was supposed to see them before this tour, they had canceled the tour, like right before it was supposed to happen. So I had not seen them in a couple of years. So to see all them together was really cool. And now in the front row, I'm just like, all right, this day just got even better. So we get to the show and it was amazing. You know, My Chemical Romance, as I mentioned, were touring for the Black Parade. So their whole stage setup and presentation was amazing. Taking Back Sunday, they were running with the whole Louder Now theme. So it looked like an old ticket booth from a movie theater or like a concert theater. And it was great. Him was okay at this show. I love him. They played some great shows that I saw in 2004 when it was in their first big US tour, I believe. But man, they were not the best at this show. They're a bit dull. Musically, they were great. You know, they were right on the money, but unless you were a Him fan, you weren't going to walk away this show a Him fan. Like, they were not going to earn any new fans from the show because they weren't very exciting. And when you're going to a My Chemical Romance and Taking Back Sunday and Linkin Park show, exciting is kind of the idea. Like, those three bands are known for their high energy, fun, big shows. So when you have Him on there, and their lead singer is a great singer, but he just kind of stood there and sang and smoked the whole time. But I still enjoyed them, especially from that close. You know, that was great. And being a fan of theirs before, I was like, this is cool, but they were not going to win any new fans that day, unfortunately. But then, you know, when it was time for Linkin Park, they were great. Similar set to the Bamboozle and Club show from earlier in 2007 I'd went to. But they were playing a few more things from Minutes to Midnight. Things they were playing here that they hadn't played on the previous stops. Little Things Give You Away, which was really cool to see because that was one of the more different Linkin Park songs they'd released up until that point. It was long. Most Linkin Park songs range in the high 2 minute range to the low to mid 4 minute range. So suddenly I want to say this one's like 6 minutes and 23 seconds or somewhere in that ballpark. It's a long song, especially for Linkin Park standards. I know a lot of other bands have much longer songs. And just for, you know, a quick little story about that. My girlfriend and I were playing a card game the other day during the pandemic because trying to find anything and everything just to entertain ourselves and keep ourselves occupied while we cannot go places and do fun things. So we were playing this game called Five Crowns, which was fun. We played the first round and we realized we weren't scoring correctly. So our scores were super inflated. And we're starting to get angry at each other because, you know, the scores were just getting so unreal that I was like, I'm down by like 200 points right now. This is ridiculous. And then we realized, oh, we're not scoring correctly. So we played another round and it went much better. And the end of the game was maybe a 20 point difference, which is the way it should be apparently. But during the game, we just put on background music from Spotify. We picked an artist. I believe we picked Foreigner, which she actually picked, which was shocking because I didn't know she knew who Foreigner was or liked Foreigner. So that was kind of cool. But she picked Foreigner and just did Spotify radio based on that. And One by Metallica came on. And, you know, One is like a seven and a half minute song. And about 6 minutes in, she looks up. She's like, oh, my God, I did not realize how long this song was. And I love One. One is one of my favorite Metallica songs. It's off my favorite Metallica album. Justice for All is just amazing. Blackened is my favorite Metallica song of all time. But One, man, when that the end kicks in and you just get those heavy guitars and the double bass and that crazy solo, man, it's so good. I love that song so much. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously that's par for the course for Metallica. They, you know, Blackened is like a 6-ish minute song. One is 7.5 minutes, but for Linkin Park, 6 minutes and 20 seconds, that's long for them. That's double their average song length. So A, for them to play that live, that's crazy. But another thing that makes that song unique for them, and as one of two songs on Minutes to Midnight that do this, something they've never known before, there is a guitar solo, which is different for Linkin Park. Now they've had that in a bunch of songs, so it's not as uncommon. But, you know, for Hybrid Theory and Meteora, it was very new metal and very bar chords and power chords and, you know, kind of these chugging palm muted riffs and harmonics and stuff like that. So when you get to Minutes to Midnight, there's a lot more different ideas going on that album. There's more electronic keyboards and synths that are the main instrument of the song. And then there are songs with guitar solos and there's acoustic guitar and there's a lot of different sounds on an album. And I love that album. In Pieces is my absolute favorite song on that album, which they also play at this show. And it also has a solo. But man, I'd seen some of these songs like for the first time, like Little Things Give You Away, In Pieces. These are songs I never heard them play before. And this was another one where they close with Bleed It Out. And this actually might be the first show I've seen them close with Bleed It Out, which became their big closer for a long time. Because that song, I go back and forth on Bleed It Out. I love the song. It's a great song. I just don't think in the pantheon of Linkin Park songs, it's the best song. So the fact that it was the closer for so long kind of bummed me out, because I'm like, man, you have One Step Closer, you have Faint, you have these great big songs you can close with. But I also get changing it up, and Bleed It Out was just like a party. And they added a solo and all these extra things, and they would sometimes add covers into the bridge of the song. Later on some of their tours, they were playing Sabotage by the Beastie Boys. And I think it was after one of them had passed away that they were starting to do that as a tribute to him. But at this one, they weren't doing that yet, but they were doing, there's a drum solo and there was a sing-along part and there was all these big things. And it actually turned out to be a great closer. But this show was awesome. There's not many other stories from this show for me, hence why there's going to be a second show on this episode. But man, this was a great tour. But before we jump into the second episode, the second show of this episode, I'm going to share a story I just found out yesterday, which I thought was really interesting about this tour. You know, with the pandemic going on right now, a lot of people are doing online content more because it's an easier way to reach out to people and it's safe and you don't have to go outside and it's something to do and keep yourself occupied. Hence why I'm doing this podcast. And Mike Shinoda is doing daily Twitch streams and YouTube streams, and he has this text service from a place called Community that he can text fans and send out songs and videos and pictures and messages and all these things. And he was on somebody's podcast recently, and he said that in regards to the Project Revolution tour in 2007, he was a little nervous about having My Chemical Romance on the tour because they were on fire. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Black Parade was out. They were killing it on their tours. They were selling out shows left and right. Their album was selling like crazy. Their on stage presence was unreal. They were just so great on their live shows. And this was Linkin Park's first big tour since 2004. They'd done a handful of shows in between there. Like they did a benefit show in 2005. They did a couple of festivals over in Japan in 2006. So, and Mike had done Fort Minor in between all that too in 05 and 06. So this was Linkin Park's first big world and US tour in years. So they were, not to say rusty, because they sounded great. Like the Bamboozle show was great. That Webster Hall Club show was amazing. This show, the Jones Beach show, was amazing. So they weren't bad. But when they come up on this show and right before them is My Chemical Romance, who just completely decimate everything. Like they're just so good on this tour. And then Linkin Park comes out. Mike was worried because he's like, we're going to get outshone every night. I think the quote he said, he was talking to Chester on this tour, and he said, we're going to be the second best band on our own tour, which, you know, obviously is sometimes going to be the case, but you want to be the best band on your tour, especially with something like Product Revolution. This was their baby. Like this was the fourth iteration of this tour, I believe, or the fifth. Yeah, 2002, 3, 4. Yeah, this is the fourth iteration. So this one, you know, they took the My Chemical Romance thing as like a fire, and the second night of the tour, Chester had watched My Chemical Romance and then went back to Mike. He's like, dude, we gotta, you know, step this up. And they did, and they started killing it every night. But I didn't know that. I thought that was really interesting, and it's kind of a nice, I don't want to say sibling rivalry, but, you know, peer rivalry in a friendly competitive way. Like, you know, you want your peers to make you better. You know, like I have friends who do podcasts, and I'll listen to them and go, man, that their content is great. Their production quality is great. I want to get there, you know? Or when I was in a band, same thing. Like we would play with bands. My old band was called Pyromyth, which, small plug, our debut/only EP we ever did, which is called Corrupted, is on Spotify now, for better and worse. I just figured during all this downtime, I was going through all this stuff. I had pictures, videos, music, CDs, and everything. And there's so many things that if you don't share them, they just kind of become memories. And if you don't find a way to put them out there, that's all they'll ever be. So I decided to look into getting things out there via Spotify and streaming services, and sharing things more on social media. So we made a Facebook page for our old band called Pyromyth. And like I said, the album's out there. And we were 16 when we made it. So it's not the best. It's not bad though. You know, I'm proud of it, especially for a bunch of little 16-year-old shitheads in New York. Like it's a fun little, you know, 20-something minute EP of teenaged angst and kids who didn't know exactly what sound they wanted to be. So there was a little bit of everything on this album. And it was fun. And I've been talking to our singer, Danny, and our bassist, Matt. And it's just been really cool to talk about all these things. I mean, we've been sharing pictures from our old shows and stuff. So we just put that out there. But when we played shows way back in the day, we would play with all these other bands. We played with a band called Viscid, and we played with this band called Broke. Those were two that we played with all the time. And God, those bands were amazing. Like Broke's singer/bassist was this guy named Jesse, and he was awesome. He was a great bassist. He was an awesome singer, great stage presence. And then Viscid, their drummer, Andrew, God, kid was, you know, four times the drummer that Lars Ulrich is. And he's, you know, when all this was happening, he was probably a fourth of the age of him too. So it's, you know, we'd play with these guys and we'd watch them at our shows that we'd all play together and just be like, man, these guys are great. We want to be as great as these guys. So I get that idea of looking at the bands you're touring with and looking at the bands you're playing with and being presented next to as peers and saying, I got to step this up. I got to make us better, because I liked what Mike said. You know, you don't want to be the second best band on your own tour. Which is not to say you don't want to tour with great bands. You just want to push yourself to be the best band you can be and the best band on your own product, which 100% agree with. But that all being said, let's move on to show number two. And this is also on the Project Revolution 2007 tour. And this was at the PNC Bank Art Center in Holmdel, New Jersey. Now, this one was interesting because I think this was the longest gap between shows on the same tour. I'm trying to think of the biggest gap previously. Probably 2003 when we did the Jersey and Orlando stops on a Summer Sanitarium with Metallica. That was 5 days, maybe. So 2 weeks between stops on a tour is really interesting, especially when the venues are only about 45 minutes to an hour apart. So that touring route is really interesting. I'm always curious why that happened. And I still don't know. So like I said, 2 week gap between those shows. What was interesting was there was a show, in Camden between those stops. If this show was on the 29th, I want to say the Camden show was on the 25th, which was a couple of days before that. But my cousin, who is like a sister to me, my cousin got married that day. And obviously I had to go to the wedding. It was never a question. I couldn't not go to the wedding. But I would be lying if I said I tried to find a way to do both. Obviously, the ideal way to go to these shows, especially Camden, because Camden is where I played with them on Faint. And this would have been the first time seeing them at that venue since, which I was like, maybe the magic will happen again if I go to that venue. So I wanted to get there early to be on the rail. But there was just no way to make that happen with the wedding. And I said, well, what if I go after the wedding? Because the wedding was in New Jersey, which is not far or super far from the venue. But obviously, family's family, and you got to be there for family, especially when there's going to be a show a couple of days later and you already saw the show a couple of weeks before. So had to be a big boy about it. Ended up not going to it, which is fine. You know, I've been to 34 of the Linkin Park shows at this point. So I think I did pretty all right. So this show had a couple of interesting notes about it. One of which was I'd won a meet and greet, which no surprise if you listen to the show. I do win a lot of things. I will admit that. Some of my friends get very angry at me about that because I've always been very lucky. I've won a lot of radio contests where you call in and win tickets. I've won radio contests where you enter on their website. I've won random contests. Going back to when I was a kid, I won a bicycle. I won there was a thing in my grade school where I won this giant jar of jelly beans because I guessed within 10, I think, how many jelly beans were in this jar. And it was like over 6,000. And I was only off by like 10, which is ridiculous. And I had no idea how many. Nobody told me. Nobody gave me a hint. I just guessed. It was somewhere, I want to say I guessed 6,523. And I was off by like 10 or something like that. My mom always gave me a lot of crap because I was very lucky, but I never played the lottery as an adult. So I always found that interesting. But this one, I won the meet and greet. And I was all excited. I was like, hell yeah, I get to meet the band again. I haven't met them. Well, I met them in May of that year, so it was only a couple of months, but excited to meet them nonetheless. And then we get to the venue, and I went to this one with Sal again. No surprise there. And we also met up with our friend Mike at the time, who was I think everyone called him Jersey Mike. No, that's a sandwich place. I just made that up. I forget what they called him. He had a nickname, man. I can't remember it now. But Mike, we'll just call him. They had been walking by a tent for the Verizon, and they won a meet and greet via that. I don't know if it was like random or whatever it was, but they won a meet and greet with the band as well through Verizon, which was awesome. So we all got to meet them at that show. But from talking to them and the Verizon guys after they had gotten their passes, we found out that their meet and greet included a picture. And at that point, I had a ton of stuff signed by the band. I'd met them a bunch, but I didn't really have any pictures with the band. I didn't have the video from the show I played with them yet. And the only picture I had from that show was just of me with nothing. You couldn't see the band or the stage really in the background. So I had one picture that I mentioned on a previous episode of me and Mike from New York, Jones Beach in 2001. But it was a faded picture. You couldn't really see it. There was no flash on it. So that was all I had. So I was like, man, I would love to have a picture. I don't have any pictures with the band. So I finagled my way to get into the Verizon meet and greet instead of the LPU meet and greet, which entailed me just kind of endlessly badgering the Verizon dude until I was like, look, I already have a meet and greet wristband. Just let me go with these two. I just want the picture. I don't want anything signed. You don't have to give me the merch bag you give them. I just want to be in the picture. Eventually he's like, all right, fine. Just stay with us. I'll make sure you're good to go. You won't get the bag or anything. I said, that's fine. I just want the picture. He said, all right, fine. We'll make it happen. Long story short, they ended up giving me the bag anyway because I guess they just had a ton. And they're like, and at that point, it was like an assembly line. They're like, here's your bag. Everyone move in. It was like six of us, I think, for the Verizon picture, which is pretty cool. The weird thing is I look at the picture now and I love the picture because it's me and Sal and Mike and the whole band. But there's two or three other random people in the photo, which I don't want to say bums me out, but for some reason, there's this random girl in the picture who like put her arm on my shoulder for the picture. And I'm like, I feel weird sharing this picture because if people look at it, it's like, oh, is that your girlfriend? I was like, no, the dude next to her on the other side was her boyfriend. Like, I don't know why she put her arm on me. Like, that picture bothers me so much. But that's a very first world problem to have because I have a picture with my favorite band and some of my buds. So there's that. But we end up finishing the meet and greet. We go out. We watch Taking Back Sunday. We watch My Chemical Romance, amazing as they were at the New York show. Now, set list wise, they were changing things a bit on this tour. I believe they had like a set list A, a set list B, a set list C. So they were trying to change things up, which was cool because I guess they kind of knew that people were going to multiple shows on the same tour, which is cool to change things up a bit. But it's also good for the band because you're not doing the same thing every night and it's not monotonous. So it's beneficial for everybody, which I appreciated because this was the second show on this tour we had done. Like at the New York show, they opened with Wake it was their intro, and then they went into Given Up. At this show, they opened with No More Sorrow, which was awesome. That's such a cool way to open a show. And at this show, they also closed with Faint versus the last one they closed with Bleed It Out. So a little bit of a change up here or there. It just ended up swapping those two. Bleed It Out closed the main set at this show. Faint closed the encore, whereas Faint closed the main set at the previous show, and then Bleed It Out closed the encore. But other than that, the sets were pretty similar. If you ever want to take a look at any of these set lists, I feel like as these shows go on, I'm not going to dissect the set list. I feel like that's such a boring thing for me to, talk through on some of the podcasts, just because some of them do get very similar. So if you want to see any of these, I get all of them from lplive.net. Like I've mentioned those guys a bunch. Mark is an amazing dude. I love those guys. They've been super helpful with getting set lists and information for the shows over the years. So I go to them for everything. And setlist.fm is also a great resource too. But I'm pretty sure they get their Linkin Park set lists from LP Live too. So, I definitely recommend LP Live. Support those guys. They deserve it. They worked super hard on their archives. So, if you want to take a look at any of these, see the differences, maybe look up a show you went to try to remember what they played, LPLive.net. And if it's any other show, that's not Linkin Park, setlist.fm is a great resource for that too. So if you want to take a look at any of those, go for that. So cool story about this show though. So about halfway through the main set, they did Paper Cut, which they played at almost every show. And Sal and I had gotten front row seats for this show as well. But the kicker was I think we got them the day of. I don't even think we got them via resale. I think we got them via Ticketmaster like the morning of. But they popped up as single tickets separate from each other, each at opposite ends of the front row. So I was on the far right side. Sal was on the far left side. And during Paper Cut, Chester had noticed we were both on those sides. So on the first verse, Chester ran over to me and put the mic in my face to help him do the verse along with Mike. And then during the second verse, he ran over to the other side and did the same thing with Sal, which was really, really cool. Especially because at this point, Linkin Park was doing what they called the DSPs, the Digital Souvenir Package, which basically meant they were recording every show on their tours. I want to say from 2007 through 2012 was the last time they did it. And you could buy the show. Like at the show, you could buy the digital download of the show, and it would be posted a little bit later because they would mix it a little bit and, trim out some things. So I was like, cool, we're going to have a recording of this. And years later, a couple of weeks later, I did grab the recording of it. I myself can't discern my voice. Part of me thinks they might have mixed us down so you could hear Mike, but not us as much, which is fine. I get it. I don't have the best voice. Sal was a singer in a band, so his voice is pretty decent. I can get, if you're paying for a Linkin Park live show on digital download, you want that show. You don't necessarily want the, some random fans that you don't know on there. So I get it. But it was still cool to have that little bit. I still have that recording to this day. I actually might go try to listen to it after this and see if I can hear myself after all these years. I always thought that was a cool little story. So technically, I did play guitar with them in 2004. Technically, I sang with them a little bit in 2007. So there is that. But that's going to do it for today's episode. Hope you've been enjoying these so far. I've been enjoying doing them. Just nice to get back into it and walk down this memory lane here. I love talking about these shows. I don't know if you could hear it, but my voice is getting all hoarse just talking about this one. So, obviously, I love doing it though. That's going to do it for today. Next week's episode is going to be a really cool one because this one is Linkin Park's first ever show at Madison Square Garden, which was a venue I had always wanted to see them at. So I was very excited about this show. We're going to talk about that one next week. But until then, thank you so much for listening. This has been My Road to Revolution. My name is Billy. Have a great day.